Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of La Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. I'm Shu Hardy, joined, as always, by Derek Brissett. Derek, we're a week removed from the Men's World Cup final. True. You know, lots of celebrations been going on in South Africa. Lots of engagement on like World Rugby's and the Rugby World Cup's social media feeds, and no one else's apparently, because doing that is just, you know, the worst sin possible.
Yeah,
I don't know about you, but I'm a big fan of Squidge Rugby. You know, we're both English guys that have an affinity for Wales. We support the Ospreys. We both have great beards as well. And
it's settled down here, Stu.
I know, we're basically the same person.
Yeah,
and
one significantly more successful though.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks for him, but
I hope Squidge catches a break.
Speaking of catching a break, I mean, were you able to see his breakdown of the men's World Cup final?
No.
Neither was I, because I didn't see it the second it came up, and yeah, a few hours afterwards, it was flagged by World Rugby. Now, consider in mind, this came out the week after the World Cup final.
Yeah.
So there's no competition from broadcasters. There's no issues on that front. And he had been doing breakdown videos of certain games in the World Cup with his brother. But he'd been using still images. And for this, he was using apparently like actual game footage. And, you know, out came the ban hammer from World Rugby, and they took it down and issued a copyright strike against him. I mean, what do you make of all this?
Oh, it sucks. I think this is, I think, well, first of all, I just feel bad for Robbie and Will. They put out Squidge Rugby account put out that tweet that mentioned it took them like 60 hours to make the video. And which I think is important, because I do think that, you know, in general, like, people don't necessarily realize how long it takes to make this stuff. Like,
yeah,
any type of content, videos, podcasts, writing articles, you know, like, if you want to do it intelligently and at the level of quality that Squidge Rugby does it, it's very time consuming. So it's like, to know that like they spent all that time making the video and then it got taken down stinks. More importantly though, I think it illustrates the whole situation. This is obviously, I mean, we're talking about the Squidge video because it's the biggest one. He's got like the biggest independent rugby media channel, right, in the world, probably at this point in time, or at least one of the biggest. But it's like, to me, it shows that World Rugby has absolutely no idea how to grow the game of rugby. Like, no. Not a single clue. And I mean, like, I think it's partly like, obviously, like the Nations Cup or whatever they're calling that competition that they announced a couple weeks ago, cutting the sevens in half, or not in half, but like cutting out a bunch of teams from the Sevens Tour. Right. And, you know, essentially what a few weeks ago, what felt like basically locking out most of, if not, yeah, all of tier two from like ever really playing games against tier one nations outside of a World Cup a couple of weeks ago, right? Which, you know, is just kind of a shocking decision still to me that you would want to alienate. Like, there's more tier two teams than tier one teams. Like, that's a big part of the rugby fan base. But also, like, this kind of happens in the same week. You saw that like graph that was circulating, social media, or circulating like Twitter social media, from Jem Hallett, who put out that one graph that was illustrating that like rugby isn't even a top 20 sport amongst like Gen Z kids in the UK, right?
Yeah. And actually that information was provided from Dan Norton, so an ex Sevens player.
Oh yeah,
and Olympian. So
yeah, I think he knows a couple.
Yeah, so I agree. As in, and the fact that Scroll there are all these, Yeah, and there's a lot of sports that are now making their way into like the cultural zeitgeist that, you know, weren't that popular before or weren't considered sport. Like esports is huge. And that's one of the fastest growing sports. But, you know, and this is something I've brought up time and time again. And I always compare rugby to Formula One because it seems like the head honchos in charge are all rich white Europeans who think that they know what's best until someone came along and said, hang on, we can market this sport in the United States, you know, the biggest sports audience in the world. And, you know, they didn't go for the, you know, broadcasters. They didn't go after that. They just said, okay, we'll have this on ESPN. Yeah, it'll cost us a bit in the long run compared to putting it on, you know, different channels that could potentially make us more money. But we're also going to tone down our use on social media so we can get young people engaged because most people are watching races on their phone or their tablets instead. Yep. And yeah, and it's like the attitude hasn't changed with world rugby. It's like stuck in the past, stuck in the amateur era of understanding broadcasting and engagement.
Yeah, I think bringing up like, oh, people watch races on their phones, right, is, I think, perfectly ties into that like Gen Z graph. I'm going to go Gen Z and younger. What's that generation called? What's
Gen Alpha?
Gen Alpha?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Okay. Either way, is that seriously the name? That sounds like that sounds like the worst superhero team ever.
All right, that's the end topic.
Anyways, but like I think when you have like because I think that's the thing, it's like with like World Rugby, like people, like the ban on these videos means that like people, like these kids that don't use cable at all, like do Gen Alpha kids even know what cable is? I'm not even sure.
Well, I'd say Gen Alpha are like under 18, so
under 18. Yeah. Oh yeah,
so yeah, like, so yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. do they know what that is? Either way, right? Like either way, like it's like you have like you're coming up with obviously like if you're like under 20 right now, like for the future of rugby, to me, I'm still like that's the most important generation, especially like in Canada and I'm sure in other parts, right? We need more kids playing rugby or being involved in rugby, watching it, becoming fans. That's supposed to be one of the great things about MLR. But I think the reality is that if World Rugby isn't going to allow people to create content, right? Like those kids don't watch TV, right? They watch YouTube. They watch probably Twitch, right? Instagram Reels, TikTok, right? Yeah. Like that's what they watch. And they're probably on Twitter too, but like that's how they consume content, right? And if you're going to ban people from creating content that shows highlights of, you know, of the game and like, and put that as part of like a TikTok video, right? Or have, you know, something like Squidge with their analysis videos on YouTube, because it's like the reality is that like a 15-year-old probably has a better chance of stumbling across Squidge Rugby's YouTube page than like stumbling across like the BBC post-match coverage, like, or anything else that's official, right? It's like that's kind of the reality of it, is like kids aren't gonna watch TV, right? Like they're not. Like I mean, even like I'm 31, I barely watch actual TV, right? Like it's, you're not gonna, like we're not gonna have that. And like even like that argument, that was the big talking, one of the big talking points during the pool stage of the World Cup was that Ireland South Africa game that wasn't on a main TSN channel. Right. Yeah. And it's like, hey, if you want to grow the game to like a younger generation, that probably doesn't even matter, because they're probably going to see, like, you have a better chance of them seeing a highlight on TikTok than you do of having them channel surfing through like TSN anyways. Right. Like if they want to watch the game, they'll go to the streaming site. Like it's fine. they that's like that's just how that works. And like so I mean I think that's kind of where my frustration lies, because it's like, if you're not going to, my frustration with World Rugby, because it's like, if you're not going to allow content creators like Squidge or anybody else, right, Squidge, Rugby Wrap Up, like just whatever, and name anybody, right, to like show clips of games, like you have no hope of reaching a younger generation that primarily consumes media content through social media. Like you have no hope in reaching any of these people.
And I think it think it stands out to us the most, because we're millennials, so you know, we're
in between everything.
But I think it's like someone pointed out that millennials at the end, they witness the end of old technology and the beginning of new. So you know, millennials got to experience the mass consumption of like cell phones and them going from just being phones to entertainment devices, and internet going from dial up to broadband and and Wi-Fi and stuff like that. And for that reason is like, we've seen how the technology has progressed, how things have changed, you know, the rise of social media. You know, we were there for like MySpace and Facebook, and you know, one clearly outlasted the other, but we've seen what, how things have changed, how things have evolved. And we're the ones who've been like, hey, if you want to engage with us, you need to be on Facebook, you need to be on Twitter and stuff like that. And we know that for the next generation of sports fans or athletes, it's like, hey, if you want to keep these people invested, you have to, you know, have TikTok channels, you're going to have to set up a Discord, you're going to have to Twitch streams, these kinds of things.
I think that's also part of it too, though, is like you do need all of that stuff. But the big thing is, if you look at like other sports, the other sports don't stop people from making content, right? Obviously, you know, maybe there's some like respect to like TV rights holders and stuff that you can't make the exact similar content to what they would actually make. But it's like a big part of, I think, what Squidge does and why that account, why their videos are so popular, is because you can't find that anywhere. Like it doesn't exist outside of his channel. Like there's no World Rugby or official channel that can provide, that provides half an hour ish videos that are both in-depth analysis and excellent analysis at that, right, on the game itself, mixed in with a little bit of comedy, right, mixed in with a little bit of storytelling, right? Like there's none of that. Like Squidge has probably done more to make people care about Rodrigo Fernandez and Chile than anything that World Rugby has ever done over the past like year. Right. Because some of his Chilean videos are great, right? And like the Chilean players even like shouted him out after they after a couple of games too, right? Like it's the reason why Squidge's channel is so popular, World Rugby, is because he does something that they do something that nobody else does, including World Rugby. So it's like you're just banning excellent content that's doing nothing but helping to promote your sport, and you're taking that away, which I think comes back to like your earlier point too. It's like rugby doesn't know how to market themselves.
No,
right? Rugby, I think, as a sport as a whole, I'm not like, this isn't like directed at like individual people or anything, right? Because I'm sure like there's great marketers that work within rugby, but like as a conglomerate whole, right? It's just like we don't know how to like market, and that goes from like minimal things like you know, simple things like, hey, players should have their last names on the backs of jerseys. So you have to know who they are, right? You have to know who they are. You have to know. It's, you know, and like even like the idea of, okay, if we put a game on TSN, that means like people might see it in bars. But just because someone sees it in a bar, you have to give them a reason to care about that. Like, why is this game important? Like, why? Like, you have to be able to like tell the stories about the players, about the teams. Like, why should you care about this game? It's not enough to just put it in front of somebody, right? You have to explain why you should care. You have to tell that story. That's something I think Squidge does a good job of doing, right? And it's like, we all kind of need to do that, right? But if you're going to take away people's abilities to make content and stuff, then it's like, I don't think it's gonna be really tough to appeal to like a younger generation, especially when like you're not being active on the platforms where they consume their media, right?
Yeah. And it's something that World Rugby needs to do, and especially with elections coming up next year, a certain Mr. Beaumont will be wise to pay attention to the next generation coming through.
But like literally, like the like Peugeot, when he ran, like part of his thing was like, we need a video game. Yeah, and it's like, yeah, but also like there is a video game, but you need a good video game.
Yeah,
like, there's a difference.
Yeah, I know, but we will have to basically see what happens with all of that. Anyway, let us talk about rugby that did happen this weekend.
But mainly we can't show it either.
Oh, we can't. Yeah, you know, World Rugby owns, so it is what it is. But at least this game was on a TSN channel. Yeah. And this was Canada's game in the WXV against France, a replay of the bronze final from last year. And, you know, a very good game because Canada scored, so it's immediately better than the
they immediately final. Improved.
Yeah, it started out a bit familiar with France getting the first points of the game through a penalty, and then following up with a try, and the try that was converted. And then, you know, I'm watching this and I'm like, you know, I think I've heard this one before. Seems very hauntingly familiar. I'm not entirely sure what I should be expecting over the next, I don't know, 70 minutes or so. But thankfully, Emily Totosi was the first scorer of the night, getting over for a try, converted by the best player in the world, Sophie Degoody. And it was very interesting that World Rugby
should also tell World Rugby that, please.
Well, that's the thing. I think it was basically just a competition for second at this point, because
I know.
But then again, they may have just looked at the World Rugby rankings and gone, the top teams are England, New Zealand, France. I'm tired. I'm going to stop there. But anyway, so Totosi gets over, and Schofield, and then Condi for France gets yellow carded. Then we have Schofield getting the try at the start of the second half to bring Canada into the lead. And then we have Holtkamp going over as well. Degoody proving that she's human by missing that conversion. But then we have Menage getting a try for France as well. And, you know, France coming back into it. But then final try for Canada scored by Bermudez, which, and to be honest, Schofield and Bermudez's tries were just fantastic ones to
unreal,
watch.
Unreal tries, yeah.
And the good thing is you can actually watch replays of this because it's on the WXV website. They still have all the highlights up from all the games. So if you want to catch these themselves, by all means.
But you can't see clips of it on social
media. Not social media, just on their channels as well. But that's it. And then the game closed with a trade of penalties between France and Degoody, scoring the last points. The final score, France 20, Canada 29. It's been done. You know, this was something that Kevin Ray was sending out, that they wanted to get a win against the top three team, and they were able to get it. You know, unfortunately, the loss to England denied them winning the WXV one overall. But this was, you know, what they said. And, you know, this France team has just been here, there, and everywhere. I mean, they beat the Black Ferns. Then they lose to the Wallaroos, and then they lose to Canada. It's like, couldn't predict it at the start of the tournament, really. But, you know, fantastic to all the players involved. You know, Bermudez especially winning player of the match as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was great to see. And you know, and I said it earlier this year, but 9 games in 1 year outside of a World Cup. I think that's the most for Canada women have ever had.
It's a lot. Kevin Rouet after the game, though the world, America's Rugby News has the quote. He ends his post-match thoughts with, "It's great to have finished with a win because we won't be seeing each other again for 6 months." So that's obviously like the Premiership women's rugby season, which obviously has a lot of, you know, Canadian rugby players heading over there, you know, in France and wherever else anybody's going to go play. But hopefully they can kind of keep the pace of it. I think from like, I really enjoyed the WXV, like the tournament as a whole. I wish it was longer. Like, why not go with like, if that's, why not play all of the 5 other teams at each level?
I can understand why they don't, in the sense of you've already played two of the teams already that year.
So then it's
also about like player management and things along those lines as well. It may be something that comes up, you know, in future tournaments. We'll have the WXV again next year, but then it'll be off for the World Cup in 25. So maybe 2026, we see like a reformat of the competition, you know, maybe more games. Maybe it's something that comes along like the Nations Championship or something like that, as in you play three games in the summer, an extra 3 games in the autumn, and something like that. You know, I'm just spitballing. It's very difficult to measure the success of the WXV at the moment, because obviously it's split over 3 tournaments. One was in South Africa, one was in Dubai, this one in New Zealand. It had to compete with the Men's World Cup as well, which I don't think was great organization, but
because World Rugby's bad at marketing. Either way, like, I'm sure the tournament will evolve. But, you know, like, I think considering, like, the bronze medal game last year, I think this is obviously, to me, a great result for the Canadian women.
Absolutely.
The game got off to, I don't even know if I want to say the game got off to, like, a rough start. Obviously, France scored right away, made it, you know, it was 10-0 after the first 14 minutes, right? But like, France had the ball for like the first half an hour of this game. Like, it was like, I don't even know if the camera panned out of the Canadian half at any point during the first half an hour, right? Like, it was just this constant pressure from France. And I thought the Canadians, like, you know, Dugoody, Bukaboom, Holtkamp, Sabota, Menin, I thought they all did like a really good job of like being in the ruck and being like trying to slow down the French attack and like making their tackles. And really, it was like really good team defense in the first 30 minutes of the game. Right, even though they were under immense pressure, they gave up a penalty, and then they gave up on like a pretty like a well-earned try by France, right? And I mean, considering they never, like, they didn't touch the ball for the first 30-ish minutes of the game, you know, they got a big try from Totosi, which essentially came on their first like sign of life, at least like as far as playing with the ball in hand goes, right? Like, their first real chance to play with the ball in hand. They immediately go on attack. You know, they're able to get, you know, earn a penalty. They go to the corner, and then, you know, the mall was great in this game. And, you know, Totosi capitalized, right? So that turns the game a little bit. Obviously, the yellow card also adds to it. And, you know, considering that Canada didn't touch the ball for the first half an hour, to go into the sheds only down by three, like, was a pretty like immense performance from the players like on the defensive side of the ball to start the game. To even like, it's an incredible, it's a great comeback, but it's like, it's probably, the comeback is probably set up by the fact that their defensive play just kept it to only 10 points during that stretch where they were basically under siege for most of the first half hour of the game.
It goes to show the importance of defense in the women's game, in rugby as a whole, and the ability to take those opportunities when they present themselves. And, you know, as you're saying, it's been like a year since that bronze final where, you know, I think it was like 36-0. So to turn that around in a year to get a 29-20 victory. Mm-hmm. And because that's, I think, like, even with contests like this, you want to have it be a close encounter that's more engaged. You know, we had the lead swap a couple of times in this game. That's more, it's just more engaging than to get a blowout victory.
I'm all for blowing out France 80-0. Like, that's fun for me too. I'm not, doesn't have to be close.
All right.
we owe them a blowout at some point. But like, I think that, like, and then obviously a real big turning point too in the game is just the opening 10 minutes of the second half where Canada fully takes that momentum. You know, I like, basically everybody touches the ball on Scherfield's try. It's just, right, there's like the Fairies offload, and then like Bermudez has a nice offload. Scherfield obviously finishes the try. Right. That was just an incredible phase of play. Just everybody, you know, running great lines, everybody's in support. And, you know, that was beautiful. Later on, you have the Holtkamp play on, 50th minute. So that was another try as a result of a mall off a close range line out. So like the set piece was working really well, which was a big improvement over the match against England, where set piece, especially the line out, kind of let Canada down in the match against England. And it improved significantly in this game. Right. And, you know, obviously it led to two tries for Canada, but also, you know, Canada had a good scrum that they were able to, earn some penalties on, gain some field position with. They were able to use that as a weapon in their arsenal, which was also great. So set piece overall, like, huge improvement, which is great to see. And then, you know, Flo Simmons and Fancy Bermudez work an absolutely gorgeous give and go play on the touchline to set up Bermudez's try. And, you know, Bermudez was immense all game. As I mentioned, she had the nice offload to Scherfield for her try, scored a try of her own later. Right. And, you know, this was the only game she's played at the WXV, but hell of a way to make your mark on the series. And, you know, ultimately, a great tournament for Canada, and they finished second only behind England.
Yeah.
I guess we're gonna have to figure out a way to beat at some point. But but you know, for now it'll be great. And then I guess everybody's off to the Premiership or wherever they're playing club rugby.
Yeah.
I get to continue to cheer for Sophie DeGoody playing for the Saracens now.
Yeah, so speaking of England, they won their final fixture against New Zealand, a redemption themselves for the World Cup final. Their final score, New Zealand 12, England 33. And we had Australia versus Wales. Again, a close encounter. You know, Wales turning professional in the past year has really seemed to do wonders for them. Unfortunately, Australia just playing at that level a little bit higher than for a little bit longer than Wales have been. Final score, Australia 25, Wales 19. And as you said, Derek, England win the inaugural WXV1 with Canada finishing a very respectable second. Okay, and now we move from one side of the Pacific to the other, as we are in Santiago for the Pan Am Games and the Sevens for both the women's and the men. In the women's and the pool stages, they began with a 36-0 win over Chile, followed up by a 69-0 win over Mexico, and concluding with a 29-21 win over Brazil. This put them into the Cup semifinals, which began with a 45-14 win over Colombia to face the old rival of the USA. And, you know, in a good, strong game, but unfortunately they fell 19-12, winning the silver medal overall for the women's. And for the men's, they began with a 22-12 win over Brazil, followed by a 42-5 win over Mexico, before suffering a 19-5 loss to the USA. Their semifinal was against Argentina. They lost 21-7. Argentina would go on to win the gold medal. But in the bronze medal match, it would be against the USA. Canada and the USA, very, very close encounters. And, you know, after that 19-5 loss in the pool stages, the Canadian men were able to turn it around. I think the USA missing a conversion at the end cost them, with the final result being Canada 19, USA 17. So Canada picking up the bronze medal in that. So disappointment, I can probably guess, for like both teams. For women, it's the first time they haven't won the gold since women's sevens has been available. For the men, it's the first time they haven't made the gold medal match in the Pan Am Games, but they're still able to continue their medal hauls from in the history of the Pan Am Sevens. So the Canadians have been able to claim a medal every time they've been at the Pan Am Sevens. And then now, Derek, you may be saying to me, Stu, that's great and wonderful and stuff, but I'm here for wheelchair rugby. When is that going to be on? Well, good news, that is wheelchair rugby. Canada will be competing as part of the Para Pan Am Games, which will be held in Santiago, and their tournament will take place from November 18th to the 23rd.
I'm excited for wheelchair rugby.
I mean, you know, they're the world silver medalists, so, and Australia's not in this competition, so you know, they have a good shot for the gold. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we gotta hope, we gotta leave with at least one gold medal from the Pan Am Games. So you know, best of luck to the wheelchair rugby squad. Yeah, like I don't know. It's like you say, disappointment for the sevens teams. So like, I feel like we're just all in a very negative mood on everything related to Rugby Canada at the moment. I think like from the women's perspective or the women's side, it's like USA and Canada is going to be the final of this all the time, like or at least, you know, and Canada. I mean, I think Canada did what you're supposed to do. Like, you smashed all the teams that you should smash, right? And then it comes to the final, and it's going to be a coin flip between USA and Canada, right? And it's like either one of those teams can come out on top. Unfortunately, it was the USA in this one. Kind of similar. Like, I think on the men's side, Chile being as good as they were really threw a wrench into this tournament, right? As Chile continues to just absolutely elevate their status in world rugby. Like, obviously a great World Cup, you know, this past fall. And then obviously, you know, now they, you know, they got a silver medal at the Pan Am Games, knocking off, you know, they beating USA in a semifinal, right? Canada, like, I mean, you look at Canada's two losses at this tournament, one of them is to the USA, which is definitely a team that can beat Canada. Right. Canada returned the favor, though, to win a bronze medal. So can't complain about that bounce back performance. The other team they lost to is Argentina. Like, it's not like, I don't know, like, it's not that bad. Like, it's, I get that Canada, we're obviously used to winning some, like, you know, gold medals at this tournament. But you know, there's got to be like that recognition too, that like the other countries, especially in South America, are getting a lot better. This tournament's going to be a lot more competitive going forward. Maybe this is a sign of that. But like, you know, I thought it was great to see the men's team bounce back and beat the USA after losing to them in the pool stage, right? And you know, they ran into Argentina in the semifinal. right? Ultimately, they ended up winning the gold medal. But Chile, I think, you know, was kind of like the team of the tournament here. Like they were excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, congratulations to Chile, and well done on hosting, and looking forward to seeing what they can do for the Para Pan Am Games later this month. Right, let's bring it from South America back to North America, because we've got some MLR news that's come in over the past week. And as always, we're going to start with the Arrows, and they continue their player re-signings. Over the past week, they have announced the re-signing of Tyler Wong and the 2023 captain, Lucas Rumble. Those are both re-signed for the... Yeah, absolutely wonderful to see them both back in the squad. It's also been announced that Westland Insurance has re-signed as a partner for the Arrows for 2024. So they'll be continuing that partnership going on, which means that the Arrows for next season to date are in the forwards: McRogers, Roland, Larson, Grindle, Flesh, O'Neill, Wong, and Rumble. And in the backs: Brown, Malcolm, Richardson, Breen, Bowman, Bowen, Grant, Reed, Nelson, and Povey. Speaking of Povey, Povey was a trade from Houston with Biddle, Brown, and Waitakia. Trades from Rugby LATL, I guess, because we're still waiting on them to announce their name. And still it's, nine foreign
players. It's unusually long now.
Yeah, now it's just weird, really.
Yeah, now it's getting to the point of, like, you guys should probably announce something at some point. It's... Yeah. Now we're at the awkward phase of waiting. Yeah. You know, great to see sponsors coming back. Obviously, that's a super important part of the club, right? So, and you know, for the growth of rugby in Canada and the health of the team, like, you know, financially and all that. So great to see sponsors coming back. Tyler Wong, you know, made his MLR debut last year. That's, you know, he's a young player. Exciting to see how he continues to develop. And, you know, obviously, you know, him and McRogers, we got a couple really solid hookers on the team already. Lucas Rumble, that's obviously a fantastic re-signing to hear. There's obviously, you know, some shakeups in, like, the leadership group. We already know of, like, a guy like Mike Shepherd has obviously retired. So nice to see that, you know, Rumble, the captain, is coming back. Right. Obviously, you know, I still think he's, you know, one of, if not the best flanker in MLR. He, like, his ability over the breakdown to, like, poach the ball is, like, it's incredible. And when he's on his game, he's, like, next to impossible to stop at that breakdown. So absolutely wonderful to see him come back, because that might be the biggest re-signing so far, just to announce. It's just it feels just comforting to know that he's back.
To put that into numbers, to date in the five seasons that he's taken part in, Rumble has 49 breakdown steals. The next two highest players are Toma de la Vega with 15 and James O'Neill with 13. So even put together, that's still just over half of what Rumble has done.
Yeah, Rumble had the one season, though, too, where he had, like an absurd amount of breakdown steals. It was, like, high 20s, low 30s. And it was like,
21.
Yeah, and, like, if you took the two guys, and there was, like, a significant portion of the season where if you took the guy in second and third and added up their totals, they still couldn't catch Rumble. I think it just slipped over that at, like, the end of the season, but, like, there was, like, he just had, like, an absolutely immense lead. Off the top of my head, I'm struggling to remember what the actual numbers were. I think it's brilliant to have him back. Like, he's insane at that breakdown, and it's something that is really needed on the squad. Also, like, the leadership, he's a great player. You know, fun interview and stuff too, right? You know, one of those, like, faces of the franchise type guys. So that's a very key re-signing. Some great news to hear.
Yeah, okay. And now we're moving on to league news as a whole, because we've had a few signings and a few trades, but the big news that has come out this week is that there is a new partnership with terms of kit supplier and kit partner, and has been announced that there is a landmark 3-year partnership to have Kappa as the official league sponsor and kit partner. So that means all MLR kits, including fan apparel as well. So it says on the press release that Kappa's comprehensive engagement with MLR will include outfitting each team with match kits, training kits, and fan wear, ensuring that players and fans alike are dressed in comfort and style. Kappa has a long and distinguished relationship with rugby, having made iconic kits for some of the world's most renowned teams. With extensive relationships spanning teams across Europe, including those in France's top 14 and Italy's Serie A, Kappa now looks to broaden its global presence with a new partnership with MLR. I think this is, you know,
I like it.
Great news. And, you know, not to say that Paladin didn't have quality kits or anything like that, but this is a continuation. You know, Kappa is a more well-known brand, especially in, I'd say, more in Europe than anything else, but it's growing, it's expanding, it's helping demonstrate the caliber of MLR to have these guys as kit partners. And so I'm expecting some quality kits to be coming out whenever Kitmas is, hopefully
soon.
Hopefully before Christmas.
Well, I mean, like, I think, like, we said last year, right? It's like our thing last year was, like, it should come out around American Thanksgiving, because that's, like, the start of the holiday shopping season. So, that, you know, that's fast approaching. I'm happy to see Kappa in. I mean, I think I agree. I feel like it's a bigger brand than Paladin, which, you know, can be a good thing. I don't think if I'm being honest, I'm not sure if I ever heard of Paladin before the MLR signed their deal, which I mean, I guess is good for Paladin anyways. I liked a lot of the kits that Paladin did make. So, you know, it's not that I don't look back on Paladin in any negative light. I think, like, especially some of the Arrows kits that they had, like, I think over the past 2 years, been probably the two best Arrows jerseys in, like, their history.
Yeah.
We'll see what what Kappa can work up with the new color scheme and all that, though. My only real experience with Kappa, like you said, I feel like it's a bigger European brand in Europe than it is here. But like, my only experience with Kappa is the Toronto Wolfpack had Kappa jerseys and stuff for a bit. I liked what they did with the Wolfpack and, like, the design. I thought the jerseys looked good. The one thing I really do remember is they're sized, like, really small. So that might be something to, like, keep an eye out for if you're thinking about ordering some Kappa gear and, like, the first wave of merch, like, whenever that's coming.
Yeah, this is something I've found with, like, European-based kit manufacturers, is that their sizes are European sizes.
Yeah,
so
really small, yeah.
So, yeah, their large is, like, US medium, and it just follows that trend. So, you know, maybe... But then again, I've also seen with, you know, Macron and Rugby Canada, they actually advise, it's like, oh, the, you know, this European sizing, so size up to get a more accurate representation.
Yeah.
So,
it's not a bad thing. I just think, like,
no, it's just something to keep in mind when you're parting with your well-earned funds.
Yeah, because I think I usually wear, like, a lot of the rugby kits that I have will be, like, an XL, and my Kappa, like, Wolfpack ones, I think, are, like, 3XL.
All right.
Just so, but...
Yeah. Well, you know, just something we're putting out there for fans, because, you know, we're fans as well, and we understand that you want to have the kit that fits. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. Okay, let's move back into MLR. We have some signing news. Something that fell through the cracks is very bad for us, and we'd like to apologize to the player and the team. But Brock Gallagher has signed for Dallas. He is a scrum half from Alberta, and he will be playing in his first MLR season for the Jackals. So congratulations, Brock. And big news coming in from New England is that Kyle Bailey has signed for next season. I did like your post on Twitter saying that New England may never lose again.
Yeah, they might not. They might not. Every time I see a New England signing, my reaction is just, well, fuck. Like, what are we supposed to do about this? Like, they've been making some unreal signings this year. Like, every player seems like every time they lose a player, they replace them with someone that I'm just like, oh, okay. Like, that's, I see where you're going with this. Bailey's obviously a great player. Will definitely fit in with the the Canadian contingent that's down there. Right. And you know, it's like, this is gonna be what, Bailey's fourth MLR team? Right. And I mean, with like what they have like in their locks in New England, like if that's a guy that can, you know, come off the bench and you know, maybe doesn't even have to play all 16 games or, you know, like can come off the bench, like that is like a depth signing is unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, no, I,
it's,
I mean, you know, when Bailey joined DC, he clearly had a huge impact to the point where he was captain for like the playoff games.
Yeah.
So,
and he scored, he scored the try that sent them to the playoffs too.
Exactly, as that's well. So, yeah, he's still got some.
And that was coming off an injury, like a big injury too. Like,
yeah, still got something to show after all this time. Still willing to fight for being in this. You say coming off the bench, he is going for that starting jersey.
Well, like New England's got. So what are they? Who are the locks right now? I'm trying to do this off the top of Larson.
I'm sure Larson,
Von Dattelson, Bailey. Who else have
and a bunch of non-Canadians,
although they don't count, they don't.
Non-Canadians
are not going to play ahead of the Canadians.
I'm sure Jack's Rangers will be on us and giving us a full list of every single detail of their locks.
I only know the names of the Canadian players on the Free Jacks. I refuse to learn the names of anybody else.
Yeah, and anyone else we've learned is. Yeah. By misfortune.
You know what? Maybe if they won something, I would care about them. But
yeah, I mean,
until that happens.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, don't hold your breath. I think we're going to be waiting a while for New England to win anything. Okay, but now, so a trade has also come through, and this technically isn't a Canadian, but he did play for the Arrows for a couple of seasons, so he's an honorary Canadian. That's Ronan Foley is joining. Has been traded to Dallas, so I'll be linking up with Brock Gallagher, and in exchange Seattle will receive Dallas's second round pick in the 2024 draft and salary cap space. So
you know, following he's gonna have a lot of Canadians next year too.
Well, that then they'll be winning more games.
Ronan Foley's not Canadian, I don't know why I said that, but
yeah, well, he's an honorary Canadian.
He's
only played one season against the Arrows. It's like after this season he reverts back to being Irish. So, you know,
it ties into the Brock Gallagher. Like, they have the whole front row and then Gallagher. So now they're up to four. So,
yeah. So,
they're building a little.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We'd like to see obviously, the more Canadians in the Arrows, we always like to see that. But as has been proven, the more Canadians in an MLR squad, the more likely you are to win a Shield. So, you know, we're not complaining. More Canadians out there, more Canadians in MLR gives them more professional experience, and you know, it just helps develop the game. And you know, always glad to see that. So Foley, if you don't join Toronto in 2025, you'll revert back to being Irish, and we, you know, forget about you, forget everything you've ever done. I'm just kidding, but yeah, as in. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what Dallas can do, especially as they're definitely not in Toronto's conference. So,
one of the three. I wonder when that's going to get officially announced. If it's actually the format as well.
I don't know. And unfortunately, this is going to be the longest offseason since 2020, I guess. Because it's going to be until it's, you know, actually Nola Gold posted on Twitter that, cause someone asked when is MLR coming back, and they said March 2024. So you know, now that a team has officially announced it, I think it's time for the press release to come out, MLR. You know, let's get this ball rolling. Let's get this information out there. But that does mean it's going to be another 4.5 months of off season. So we won't be able to watch MLR for the time being, unless you're catching replays on the Rugby Network. But if you do want to be watching any live rugby, the Premiership and the URC is available on Sportsnet. And, you know, I say that as the only option because Wales did have a game this past weekend against the Barbarians. Couldn't find it to save my life, but I did catch the highlights. And, you know, a fitting send-off for Welsh legend Lee Halfpenny and Welsh and Barbarian legends Justin Tipperick and Alan Wynne-Jones. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic to see. But yeah, the Premiership and URC are available on Sportsnet. And of course, we have Canada's men's senior team in Spain for their series. Their first game will be against Spain this Saturday. And depending on how the result of that and the other game goes, they will either be facing the United States or Brazil. But, you know, no broadcast information has come out as of yet, although our money's on TSN at the moment. But keep paying attention to our social media channels and we will update you as soon as we know. So if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out more episodes as well as our written pieces on our website, therougerugby.ca. You can also find our podcast at Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. We also have a YouTube channel at The Rouge Rugby with episodes of the podcast, as well as extra interviews with players and coaches. Make sure to like and subscribe. Hit the bell notification to stay up to date with all our videos. We're also available across social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all at The Rouge Rugby. Derek, where can people find you on social media?
At Brissette the Jet across all social media platforms.
And you can find me across social media at Hardman, spelled H4RDMAN. Well, that's where we're going to end this episode. Derek, thank you for joining me, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.